is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The King's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viziosi jumped it perfectly.
Hello and welcome along to another episode of From the Horse's Mouth. I'm Tom Nugent, and as ever, I'll be joined by Messrs. Walsh and Power as we reflect on the Haydock Sprint Cup, the Pre-Moulin, and of course the Kentucky Derby and Oaks. But most of all, we'll be building up to Irish Champions Weekend. We've got lots in store, including an exclusive interview with Dennis Hogan, and it's all coming straight from the horse's mouth. Yes, you're very welcome back. The evenings are drawing in. It's a rather grey Monday where I am, but we're going to try and lift the mood a little bit, stay positive. We might be talking about restricted crowds at festivals next season or whatever, but we won't dwell on that just now, because here to brighten up your day are two possibly of the chirpiest men in sport, Mr. Paddy Power and Ruby Walsh. Gents, how are you?
I'm delighted to be considered a man in sport. I think that's great. Thank you.
I would have called you an elite athlete, really.
Yeah. That's what I feel like, Tom. Things are good. A new week begins. Oh, yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
Ruby, I trust you're upbeat as ever, are you?
I could just do with some of Paddy's positivity. The mundaneness of our new normal is definitely setting in, and the thoughts of having so little to look forward to. Even Champions Weekend is coming up, but you know it's not going to be the same. Listowel will follow suit. It's not going to be the same, but we have to find something to look forward to. So, Tom, you're going to inspire us all. Give us something to look forward to.
Well, we haven't really got anything in the diary, but maybe we could meet up for a socially distanced coffee or something. Would that be up your street? Would that excite
you? Why don't we go on the
lash really?
For Ark Day?
I think there's a plan. Now, see, it took Paddy Power to come up with the idea, but there is a plan. It's a couple of weeks away. We can look forward to it. Organise the venue. Buy heaters, lots of heaters to put outside, a couple of umbrellas. But there is a plan. It's something to work on, something to look forward to. That's what I'm talking about. See, I should have thrown that back to Paddy. I knew too well you stuck in the back end of Kilkenny wouldn't be able to inspire us. Whereas Paddy, he'd always have an answer. Those wellness books, he's been reading it from front to back and he has an answer.
There it is. We're going on the piss for Ark Day. Chalk it down, put it in the diary, and it's something to look forward to. We've got lots to reflect on, lads. We're going to crack on with a couple of news stories from the weekend. Haydock Sprint Cup was a big feature. Another Group 1 winner for Oisin Murphy. Ruby, Dream of Dreams, good winner of the Haydock Sprint Cup, did you think?
He was a good winner. Your eye was drawn to him, Tom, passing the tree pole. He was the one horse he wanted to be on. The race had split in two, obviously, two groups, one on the far side, one on the near side. But Dream of Dreams is the one he wanted to be on. Golan Hard was over there all on his own. Glenn Shiel and Holly Doyle were leading the pack on this side, but the horse travelling best was Dream of Dreams. There was no doubt about stamina, and he's just become a less complicated horse as he's gotten older. Oisin Murphy was able to ride him much closer to the pace than he has been ridden in sprints in the past, and that told in the end.
Well, it was nothing more than a routine piece of work for Enable in Kempton, so not much to report there, but we did have plenty to look at in France. Paddy, the Prix de Moulin, did you see it? Pinatubo finishing with
rattle. Yeah, but I thought the winner was really good. I think Pinatubo, personally, I think we've kind of given up on him. I've given up on him anyway. I know you could say, I don't know if you'd ever say he was unlucky, but he came late and fast, but the winner had gone at that stage, and I think that's just... the winner was just better, because the winner was the race well, son of then Persian King. Looks a really, really good, really decent horse, and the way Circus Maximus kind of took it on, and then it looked like, you know, it ran the finish out of like Siskin and that. I thought Persian King was very good, and I think it probably does. Ruby mentioned it the other day, was it Frank mentioned it maybe on Friday, that he didn't know if the Irish Guineas form kind of hadn't really worked out for Siskin, but you know, had been unbeaten up to his last two runs. But yeah, I thought Persian King was very, very good and could be right up there. And Andre Fab said afterwards that it was the first time they'd had him ride over there to train him or something, because he had all the little niggles. So it could be more to come from him.
Ruby, there was a plenty of press about the ride Pinatubo got. What happens in that situation as a jockey? Do you think there's legitimate excuses, or do you have to kind of just hold your hands up and say, maybe I timed that one wrong?
I thought the start was fascinating. Circus Maximus broke really fast, so the Persian King, as Pierre Charles Boudot and Ryan Moore were going forward. Colin Keane ended up slotting over into third, but I don't know, was it Colin Keane's plan to be as handy either? And he seemed to allow Persian King and Circus Maximus away. Yeah, Pinatubo was flashed home, but Persian King and Circus Maximus, they got away in the first quarter and they were able to sit in the middle while the others were closing, and that allowed Persian King to kick again. And then Pinatubo, who I thought looked more maybe of a 6 furlong horse a couple of runs back yesterday, looked like he wanted every yard of the mile and was getting it really well. It just didn't play out for him, but it all happened in the first half of furlong.
Paddy, you gave us the mug double for the Kentucky Derby and Oaks on Friday. Weirdly, that didn't work out. And just to top things off, Bob Baffert ended up in his arse.
I didn't see that, did he?
Yeah, he got wiped out in the winner's enclosure, yeah.
Jeez, I didn't see that. But no, I had gaming backed or whatever in the Oaks. But I actually ended up backing the winner of the Kentucky Derby because I didn't want to back an odds on shot at that stage. I needed a bigger price. So I backed the winner of the Kentucky Derby, which was nice. But
Sorry, can I just stop you there? After last week talking about after timers, that is an absolutely disgusting and pathetic bout of after timing there.
Yeah, well, sorry about that. Yeah, but I did anyway. Didn't see Bob Baffert on his arse. So is he okay? Did he get kicked or just knocked over?
Just knocked over. He whipped around in the parade ring.
He wasn't hit by a tennis ball from Novak Djokovic, right?
He was in the winner's circle and the horse spun around and knocked him over.
Lovely.
Ruby, starting to crank up a little bit. We're seeing some better bumper horses and stuff starting to appear slowly but surely. We've got racing in Punchestown this week, but we also heard from the head of the Racecourse Association, just to really keep us warm through the winter and give us something to look forward to, that Cheltenham will most likely be a restricted capacity next year. It's not a surprise really, looking at the big picture, but it just wouldn't give you a big lift, would it?
It doesn't, and it kind of brings it more and more into reality all the time that this is not a short-term situation. It is a long-term thing, and it is disappointing, but I feel sorry for those that will be restricted from going, but I'll have an even fiver. I'd be able to get there anyway. And I'm kind of worried about myself.
Thanks, Ruby. Thanks a million. Paddy, we've got lots of good racing to look forward to. Doncaster. We've got the likes of a raffle prize, Alpinista, Manuela de Vega, and Logician is back. The unbeaten Logician last year, St. Ledger winner, back for John Gosden.
Yeah, Logician. Kind of forgot about Logician. Yeah, I mean, that'd be good to see. I mean, looking forward to the weekend, obviously, because he got... obviously, good race at Doncaster, but the Champions Weekend back home as well, and it's going to be a cracker. And this is something to look forward to. I know it's not going to be the same, and Ruby Amonov, and he probably has to work on the telly for it. But this is another one where you kind of sit down, hunker down, get a few lads together, a bag of cans, and someone's gaff. Socially distance, of course, no more than six people from three different households, or whatever the latest bleeding restrictions are. But anyway, sit down and watch the race and do it old school. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to that. I forgot about Logician. I hadn't even considered him for the legend.
Ruby, Paddy's faffing there. He obviously hasn't looked at the cards for Doncaster yet. Would you have anything that stands out at this stage for Doncaster, or have you looked either?
I did. I looked at Doncaster, and I think Doncaster, I've been to the Doncaster, this Doncaster meeting, and had a great day out. Clondalkin Warrior ran the Doncaster Cup one day on the Friday. Myself and Gillian went, and we had great fun. But I think 4 days of this meeting with no crowds will expose the Doncaster meeting for how little quality racing it actually has. And I think you've Logician, yeah, he's in a conditions race, but he looks head and shoulders above the opposition. You have a couple of group races, group threes, listed races. The Doncaster Cup on Friday, that's probably the highlight. And I think Nayef Road could get his day. He's been banging on the door a lot of the cup races. 2.25 miles in Doncaster will suit him. But again, with the prize money the way it is, and the Doncaster Cup never being a huge pot, you've no Stradivarius.
Well, plenty of great racing in Yorkshire over the next few days, but we're not short on quality on this side of the Irish Sea either, as all eyes look to Leopardstown for the best race of the weekend, the Irish Champion Stakes. This week's Racing Gold is right up there with the best of them. This is for the underdog, underdog. You can count me out or watch me rise. I've been going up against it all my life. I'm gonna prove the whole world wrong tonight. This is for the underdog, underdog, yeah! The Irish Champion Stakes is only 44 years old, but it has become one of the most hotly contested races in the European calendar. This is to some extent thanks to Aidan O'Brien and Cool Moore using this race as a launch pad to international challenges later in the autumn. But they haven't had it all their own way. In 2014, they saddled superstar Australia as heavy odds on favourite. Having completed the Derby double, he was fresh from a comfortable win in York's Judmont International. Second at York was the Grey Gatsby, trained by Kevin Ryan and ridden by Ryan Moore. When you think I've had enough, I start to bite. I'm gonna prove the whole world wrong tonight. This is for the underdog, underdog. You can count me out, but watch me rise. I've been going up against it all my life. I'm gonna prove the whole world wrong tonight. This is for the underdog, underdog, yeah.
Kingfisher and Shamey Heffernan lead. Mukadram moves second. They're followed by Al Kazim, Trading Leather. Australia racing round them on the outside. They're followed by the Grey Gatsby, straightening up for home with two to go. Mukadram comes to join Kingfisher. Here comes Australia now, racing right up to them on the outside. And it's the Jewel Derby winner, Australia, the Grey Gatsby, putting in a strong bid towards the outside. They're inside the last 150 yards. Australia in front for Joseph O'Brien. The Grey Gatsby and Ryan Moore on the near side, neck and neck, 50 yards to go. Australia, the Grey Gatsby, the Grey Gatsby has got him on the line. Ryan Moore wins the Quipco Champion Stakes from Australia.
Yeah, you can tell by Desi Scal's voice there in the call that it was a big shock to everyone. Australia was 130 on favourite on the day, but rolled over by Ryan Moore, Kevin Ryan and the Grey Gatsby. Only a neck between them, Ruby. The leaders went hard early and the first and second were kind of dropped out. Australia probably got the better run off the bend when you look back at it, but the Grey Gatsby just came with a run on the outside and not a great time for the Coolmore partners. I'd say there were a few red faces after that one.
I don't know. Look, I'm not speaking out of school. I know from talking to Joseph O'Brien, and he has said it several times himself, it is one race he would love another go at. And all jockeys have those kind of races. But I think if Joseph was on Australia again, he wouldn't have chased the ones in front across the bottom and found himself in a position where he was 8 wide all the way around the bend into the straight, making his move to go clear. If he had just stayed where he was with the Grey Gatsby behind him, followed them into the straight, saving the ground, and then had his goal, he probably would have won. But that's racing. You make tactical manoeuvres. He was keeping an eye on Mukadram and Al Kazim, but Ryan Moore, riding the longest priced horse, had the freedom to sit and watch the race unfold in front of him and then deliver his challenge and when the others had run their race. But Australia was a very good horse, but on that occasion, it just didn't work out for him.
Paddy, I've only been to kind of a couple of flat meetings in particular where the crowd is in such anticipation for a short price favourite and then they get turned over. You could hear a pin drop when Australia got beaten on Leopardstown that day. Like from a bookmaking perspective, like it's a skinner, like it's ideal apart from a few people backing the Grey Gatsby each way. Like to get that short price favourite beaten is unreal, isn't it?
It is good, but I've kind of always kind of been philosophical about it. I think that the bookies need to get their pants taken down on the big days because the bookies make enough money for the rest of the year. So I always think it's good if you get a the Irish Banker at Cheltenham or say something like that in a queue clicks on a big day or something like one of the three short ones go in or whatever, or favouring the Grand National. I think that's quite good for the games. You want people to have a good experience when they're having a bet as well. And I probably would have been at Leopardstown that day. And I think, like, you know, just for the The crack's not the same. There's something about the place when they're out of the four or five favourites or after going into the big races. There's something about the crack at the place and that everyone's in good form and everything like that. And everyone's invincible. And I wouldn't be like a greedy bookie from that perspective. I think that's just something that's good, better fun and creating a better occasion is better for the game. So therefore, the short-term pain of getting a short price favourite winning is much better than that little extra few quid in your back pocket. But I think that day, it's interesting what Ruby said there. Does that mean that, like, that Joseph O'Brien's, if you can call it a bad ride because he got beat, but again, they finished well clear in the third. So if the Great Gatsby hadn't chinned him, he's after winning the Champion Stakes by two or three lengths. And there's, would he even have, like, if you've won, do you question your ride? Or do you just kind of say, well, we won?
Yeah, definitely. You can get away with it. That's what we would say in racing. I got away with that one. You'd know you'd have to give him on a bad ride and winning on it. And you think, thank God. You know, that's more of a sigh of relief when you get away with it. I dropped my whip at the back of the last and big bucks in a stairs hurdle and he still managed to get home. I wasn't delighted at the winning post. I was bloody relieved.
Did you go back and get the whip or did you just get a new one?
No, someone picked it up for me, but I was just relieved. That's relief. Yeah. When you do something wrong and you get away with it. And that's in every walk of life. But look, you make decisions on horses' backs. We spoke about Pinatubo earlier. It's not as simple as following a script. And you make a decision and one wrong manoeuvre in a race can put you in so many wrong places.
Ruby, before we finish on this story, we talk often in sport about kind of, you hear the phrase, leaving it all on the pitch. That was Australia's last run before he retired to stud, but the Grey Gatsby kept going for a number of seasons and actually never won again. He ended up with Dermot Weld towards the tail end of a season and wound up kind of, he signed off finishing last of nine in Belmont Park.
Yeah, but that was the pinnacle of the Grey Gatsby's career. There was, if everything went right for him, going to be one day of that size in his career. And that was the day he got it.
Lovely stuff. Well, now it's time for our intrepid reporter, Mr. Paddy Power, who was on the road earlier this morning at the crack of dawn to speak to trainer Dennis Hogan ahead of Make a Challenges Tilt at the Flying Five at Irish Champions Weekend.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
It's been a pretty eventful year in the world, but also in the world of Dennis Hogan. You had you retired from riding. You've had probably some of the best horses you've ever had. You've had great days and awful days as well. But tell us a little bit about the decision at Galway to hang up the saddle.
You're right, it's been an eventful year of ups and downs, but plenty of loads of ups, to be honest. It's I suppose it started out with we didn't know if there was going to be any racing this year. We were in lockdown for 2 months more with no racing. When it started back on the 8th of June, we landed running with Skeptical and he bolted up on a list of race. He went favourite for the King Stand, and just from there we've had 30 winners since, and lots of big races. And in the middle of all that, I rode a winner at Galway and I decided to retire. That was an eventful day as well. So, and Make a Challenge has come along and he's improved and he's favourite for a Group 1 at the weekend.
So at Galway, that day when you did retire, so you gave a pretty emotional interview to RT and everything like that, and it was really kind of nice to see. And that's part of the beauty of a festival. All these things happen, you know, and the viewer at home feels part of it. So first of all, had you planned that? I presume you're thinking at some stage you're going to jack it in because you're getting too busy, but had you planned to stop then at Galway, or were you going to stop at a winner, or what was the thought behind it, or was there any thought process?
To be honest, it's been, the last 2 years I've been advised by a lot of people that I shouldn't be riding, but to be honest, riding wasn't something I'd done for a living anymore. It was more, I school a lot and I like school and I ride out a lot, and when I'd see a nice horse, it was my hobby to be sitting on a couple of nice ones. I didn't really do it as my primary job anymore, but I really enjoyed it and I didn't want to stop, but this thing has gone so big. I suppose I had to concentrate on the training, and as much as Ted Walsh thought I was in for the money, I can assure you I wasn't. It was the love of the game. So it was yeah, it was a decision, I suppose. It was hard to make, but I had to do it. And it was a, I always thought if I wrote a winner at Galway, it'd be a nice way to do it, because I really like Galway and it's been good to us down the years. So it was a good way to go.
And you train jumpers and flat horses. I mean, does one easier than the other, or do you prefer one to the other, or what's the difference?
We would have set out, Paddy, jump trainer, generally jumps, and would have bought plenty of flat horses to go jumping. That ended up some of them not staying out the distance, and we'd go back in the flat and have been very successful. And then we started actually buying flat horses and sprinters, and really enjoyed the flat, the sprinters especially. They just, you don't know where they're going to stop improving. And I suppose on the plus side of it, there's a big market for the flat horses and sprinters all over the world, whereas the jumpers were confined to Ireland and England primarily.
You were saying that earlier, you've had a bit of a, you've been dragged around the world a bit. You were over in Qatar racing as well. I mean, it's mad to think, isn't it?
It's mad. That's the thing about the flat horses. They could actually bring you anywhere in the world or any continent. Australia are buying a lot of the staying horses, and they invite a lot of people down to the big races, and so do Dubai and the UAE. Qatar, we were in the spring with Mega Challenge, looked after unbelievably well, and Saudi have a big carnival now, and obviously there's Breeders' Cup, and there's just anywhere you can go with a good horse, really.
And you were saying one of the yokes earlier, I shouldn't call him a yoke, one of your horses earlier, Dalby, was qualified to run in the Kentucky Derby and invited over.
It wasn't suiting us to send him, unfortunately, but he'll probably run this weekend and Champions again instead. But it just shows you where you can go with a group horse. It's unbelievable where you could get to.
Now, you mentioned skeptical earlier. I hate to bring it up, but I have to ask you about it. It must have been an awful day. I mean, it happens to every trainer, I guess, at some stage, and not every owner, but a lot of owners have to go through it as well. It's a real kick in the crown jewels. But like, it's just one of those things, isn't it? I mean, it just was an awful day, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it was a very sad day, and unfortunately, it happens in the game. We don't always hear about it when the horses are maybe at a lower level, but this was as good a horse as we've ever touched on, and he was destined for big things, and he could have brought us all over the world as well. But I suppose we have to be grateful for what he done for me and for the owners, for the yard. He brought us up that notch. He got placed in two group ones for us, and showed everyone that we can train a group horse. And obviously it was documented how little he cost, and we didn't buy him thinking he was going to do what he done, and we have to be grateful for what he done for us.
Yeah, it was the fairy tale story of Ascot and all that kind of thing, wasn't it? The horse he bought for 10p, and he's going to run the Group Ones, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't realize until we lost him how much of a following he had. We got hundreds of comments, thousands of emails, comments, and just generally people who were sorry for us. So
not really nice if people go to the effort of actually dropping a line,
We probably been so busy here, we hadn't realised that he had such a following, and what Ascot and Newmarket and the whole story had done for us, really, for everyone.
Yeah. And then Frankie was going to be riding him, and it's not quite as controversial as I thought it was, actually, about jocking off the umphill of it. It wasn't the case at all, it sure wasn't.
No, definitely not the first day. He 7-pound claimers were actually exempt from riding in the UK at the time because of
the COVID
restrictions, and unfortunately for Joey Sheridan, he couldn't have ridden them. But when Frankie's agent rang, I think we were sitting here actually, and an English number rang my phone, and it was Willie Ryan saying Frankie really liked to ride the horse in Ascot and he thinks he can win. And the owners sat up and took note and were like, definitely put him on. So he ran a big race, and he's in top company, and he showed that he could compete there.
Yeah, and now he's got Mega Challenge. He's got some pretty big boots to fill, I guess, but it's going the right way.
Yeah, we've been blessed with Mega Challenge. He's really stepped up a gear since we lost Skeptical, and he's really flying the flag for us, and he was very impressive in Navan and Nakora, and he's had a really nice prep going into the Flying Five. We just need a little bit of rain during the week, and we'll have a big chance.
So doing the rain dance all week?
Yeah, my dad's looking for dry weather to harvest some corn, so we can't say too loud. So he owns a leg in him, so he can't say too much. Yeah.
And I'll ask you about some of your other horses in just a minute, but the you were saying earlier as well, you got the, it's kind of the first time you've had some decent juveniles and 2-year-olds and that, and they're really enjoying getting the horses early and getting a chance to put your stamp on them. Like,
yeah, I suppose originally, Paddy, we would have always bought secondhand goods from the in-training sales, 3 and 4-year-olds. This year we have some really nice, we were sent some really nice 2-year-olds, and it's a division that we really like to get more into, so we have more potential coming through, and that we're not having to mess around with people's secondhand stuff, that we can have some really nice horses coming through, and we've some nice juveniles in Lady Princess and Gramata, who are really exciting.
Okay, Lady Princess, yeah, she beat Gramata the last time, didn't she?
She actually did in Bellystown in the maiden. She beat Gramata, and she'll run in a nursery in Navan this week. So yeah, hopefully she can go on to good things. Both fillies are very fast, and they both have big futures.
Okay, cool. Now moving on to Champions Weekend, I presume you'll have probably 3 or 4 runners, but the Make a Challenge, obviously the Stable Star, going to that one, that's like all no tactics yet, wait for the draw type of thing. And
yeah, I suppose we generally keep it simple. The only time we got it wrong this year was when we actually tried to hold him up in the Greenlands. He broke well, and I was quite adamant that we'd take a sit, and he got disappointed when we took back, and Speaking Colours got first run, and we never really got going that day. So ever since, we just jump, and wherever he wants to travel, we just don't take him back.
Yeah. Okay. And then what other ones do you have over the weekend that we can look forward to?
I think Dalvey will run in the 1.25 handicap at the Curragh in North Fields, and he's had a little break. He's just back. Big Baby Bull will run in the Sovereign Pat in Leopardstown last race on Saturday. He didn't handle the hill or the ground in Galway, and we're hoping he can bounce back on nicer ground in Leopardstown.
Is that a twinkle in your eye, hoping, or fingers crossed, hoping?
Yeah, he's a winner of a Premier Handicap this season already, and I think he can be very competitive again. Yeah.
So best chance for winner this weekend?
I would say definitely Make a Challenge. Hopefully give us our first good one.
Great. Best of luck.
God. Thanks, Paddy.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Lovely stuff. Very nice to hear from Dennis ahead of a big weekend for him. But Paddy, where you're staying in the hot seat now, as it is time for your weekly segment. It's Dear Paddy. Paddy, bear with me as I read this one. This is one from a very committed listener, Steve in Belfast. Writes, I've always told anyone who wanted to know, and plenty who didn't, that cashing out an accumulator is a crime against betting. People who cash out are second only in my contempt to those who add blackcurrant to Guinness. Proper wrongins. But if I can take you back to the Punchestown Festival of 2018, I had won the first 4 legs of a 7-fold accumulator, and to complicate matters, I had guessed the ground wrong and needed some serious luck to get that far. For the first time, I heard the siren's call of the cash-out button. I wrestled with my conscience as my finger hovered for what felt like hours. It was long enough to queue for the gent, so it probably was. To my eternal shame, I pressed it. As it turned out, the last 3 selections all lost, making my decision the right call. I had won, but at what cost? I had forsaken my sincerely held principles. 2.5 years later, I still look back on that ignominious day with mixed emotions. How do I live with myself, knowing what I've done?
Jesus. Was that you, or was that your man from Belfast?
That's Steve from Belfast.
I thought you were talking about yourself for the Punchestown part. But, Steve, I do have a lot of... I basically agree with you. I think I don't hear of blackcurrant to Guinness anymore. It was a thing back in the day, but I don't think people do it anymore, surely. But it's wrong. But back to the cash out thing. To lift the lid on it, like, you know, there's a lot of margin in cash outs for bookies. That's why they're offered. So that would suggest that you shouldn't cash out. Now, obviously, it can go right for you sometimes. Having an accumulator is greedy enough anyway. I mean, the reason accumulators were invented was back when you had to pay tax, betting tax on your stakes. So rather than putting 20 quid in the first horse and then rolling on to the next, you just put it all in one bet. So in theory, you should be brave enough to have your one bet and then have all the winnings on to the next one if you want. And that way you can kind of do your own little cash out all the way along. But no one ever does that, and I don't do it myself. But I agree with you. Make your decision. Stick with you. Stick to your guns. Don't cash out. And don't have to criticise someone who does, but just know in the back of their mind that there's the bookies winning if you're cashing out.
Lovely. Succinct. Precise. I can't be any more complimentary, really. And that's kind of wound us down. Now we're at the tail end of the show. Time for a few quick questions before we wrap up. Lads, Jack Baskerville asks on Twitter, what are your views on the future of smaller tracks? Should the reality of cold economics prevail over grassroots, or do you think the smaller tracks are vital in the grand scheme of things? Ruby, take it away.
They are vital, Tom. Most smaller race courses are run by local business people who have invested in the local race course, are shareholders, etc. The likes of Tramore, Killarney, Taunton in the UK, loads of them. There are only three I just pulled out of off the top of my head, but they're run, and a lot of race courses are run as non-profit. A lot of the shareholders invested in those tracks wouldn't be taking a dividend, but they're also most likely to be the ones that will survive because they won't have massive debt hanging over their heads. Any infrastructure or refurbishments they will have done, they will have had the capital to pay for them. You will see as the economics go along that a lot of the smaller race courses are probably more financially viable than the bigger ones because of borrowings and overheads. So that's a very long-winded, boring financial assumption. But smaller race courses are vital. But it'll be the ones that will survive are the ones with the smallest amount of debt.
Paddy, I know you're more of a metropolitan track kind of guy. You like Leopardstown and you don't really like driving too far. You'll occasionally make an appearance at the Curragh or Punchestown, but the smaller tracks need the support too, don't they?
They do, and to Ruby's point as well, I mean, it's like the tracks that, especially with restricted crowds, like it's for the foreseeable, as you said earlier, even talking about Cheltenham next year, but that means it's going to be even more difficult for the tracks, the big overheads and that, because they obviously needed to get more revenue, get more money in the gate and all that. So, yeah, I love going to small tracks. I really do. But, I mean, I probably don't get in my car and drive to Tramore. But I've happened to be down there, around there, when the racing's on. I spent many a summer down there for the Tramore Festival. But I do think there's something special and something really nice and kind of local and kind of friendly about that. But you got to be allowed to go to them too, you know.
Final question, and I think it is a compelling one. Jim Dudley asks, Ruby, is Aidan O'Brien's stable out of form or out of stars? What do you reckon?
Could possibly be the latter, Tom, but it wouldn't be the first time they didn't have a superb crop of horses. But you can have your bottom dollar, they will find them again. But to me, their two-year-olds look a little substandard, and even when you look at last year, they didn't have a champion two-year-old. It's the same on the flat as it is over jumps. If you don't have good two-year-olds, it's very hard to go have good three-year-olds. If you don't have bumper horses, you don't have novice hurdlers. If you don't have novice hurdlers, you don't have novice chasers, and then you don't have open horses either. So it all starts at the very bottom. And I would say Paddy Doyle just had two average crops of two-year-olds that they struggled to find. Well, Love accepted. I suppose we're talking on bulk here, the mass that we're used to Ballydoyle producing, the mass amount of good horses just aren't there, but they have a couple of superstars.
Yeah, Paddy, in terms of those two-year-olds, the only one off the top of your head really is the Chesham winner, Battleground, and maybe they have a couple of nice maiden winners, but there's no superstar there. It could be a little bit more open maybe than it has been in Ireland for the last couple of years. Next year,
yeah, it feels like Battleground, obviously, but a few of them got turned over at the big meetings, didn't they? They were always there towards the top of the mark and still got turned over. So, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, maybe it's not a bad thing either that it gets shared around a bit. And you see, like, you know, some of the others, like Toomey and Ger Lyons and people like that, like getting some winners of good maidens and that. So I think that's not a bad thing, really.
But you still have Santiago, the horse that won the Epsom Derby, whose name I can't, Serpentine, Peaceful, there's a lot of classic winners there. Love is the superstar.
Isn't it weird that there you were just naming up like five or six different Group 1 winners? Yeah, but they've nothing this year.
Bar love.
Lads, that's all we've got time for. Thanks a million. Ruby, before we go, Punchdown, are you working there this week? Anything to keep an eye out for?
I'm there on Wednesday. I think there's a good maiden hurdle tomorrow, Tuesday, though. Dew Cup and January Jets are a good clash in the maiden hurdles. William Mullins runs Urbini in that as well. He's a nice mare called Rula Bula in the other maiden hurdle, Mare's maiden hurdle. She might pick up a few quid for her owners who need it. Yeah, they all would have a chance.
Lovely stuff, lads. Have a great week and we'll talk to you on Friday.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, Tom. See you, Paddy.
Righto, that's all we've got time for. My thanks to Dennis, Ruby and Paddy, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. Make sure to check out all the latest odds and offers on paddypower.com and stay tuned for Friday's tipping show ahead of Irish Champions Weekend. For now, I've been Tom Nugent and that has been From the Horse's Mouth.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.
Cheers, lads.
In case you're wondering, Paddy, Tom owns Rula Bula.
I was kind of going to wonder, is that JP's or something? Just because you were taking the piss, yeah.